Hey, you guys, what's going on? It's Tuesday.
Yep.
And we're talking about another movie.
Thing from Another World. The one that John Carpenter played, did his classic, based his classic on. The one that, you know, the thing.
Although, I will say that it's like, I mean, this movie and John Carpenter's movie are based on a novel.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say, too, that the John Carpenter version is a lot more, is a lot closer to the source novel. This one is kind of, but you can tell that they didn't have the budget to do what the story, you know, kind of implied.
They went straight 1950s monster movie. They didn't, there was no real nuance in it. The whole idea of being absorbed by something and being copied, that's not there. It's just a vegetable man. Because that was a lot cheaper to
Vegetable Man.
And it's like Vegetable Frankenstein.
Super Carrot, they call him in the movie. And I'm not making that up.
Yeah. he's just a Vegetable Frankenstein. Although what's funny is that this was one of my dad's favorite movies when he was a kid. This scared the shit out of
him. One of John Carpenter's favorite movies, too.
And then when the Carpenter version came out, he took me to see it like 3 or 4 times up in Mississippi. It scared the shit out of me. I love that movie. I was probably about, 14 in 80? What year was that one came out? Maybe 81, 82. Yeah. So I was, I don't know, maybe 13 when it came out.
Yeah, because you're a couple years older than me.
Yeah.
And I was 10 in 1982. I didn't see it in the theater. I saw it like a couple years later.
I saw it in the theater multiple times. My dad was like, "We're going to see that again tomorrow." Like, I was driving back from it in his truck.
See,
Dad
had good taste.
Driving back, I was fucking spooked. I was like, yeah, we're going to see it tomorrow. Yeah. I loved being scared.
I did too as a kid.
Like, yeah, we're going to see it tomorrow.
I loved scared.
It's like riding a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And then you're worried, like, man, all the whole way back, I was like thinking of everything from John Carpenter's version, those dudes being absorbed. I was like, man, what if something like that's real? What if it's out there, you know? Yeah.
Like I said, cool, we'd be fucked if that was alien. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, if something like that showed up, that'd be it.
Yep. Well, that's what, they even knew that in the movie. That's why they're like, we can't let it leave. You know what I mean? Because it'll, like, take over the Earth. Danny Rowling said, there needs to be a color version of this film to buy. Now, I'm not sure about nowadays. I was watching the Cinemassacre breakdown of this earlier, and he had a colorized version that was from the 90s, I guess. Remember when Ted Turner was colorizing all of those black and white movies? There was a colorized version of Thing from Another World, and he had a VHS copy of it, but I don't know if they ever released the colorized version to, like, you know,
to
DVD
Blu-ray
or Blu-ray. I mean, I like black and white movies, so I don't usually, like, seek out colorized versions. I mean, I'll watch them if that's, like, all it's around. I'm not, like, opposed to it or anything like that. But it's, like, a lot of times I would rather just watch it in its original.
Yeah, it doesn't make a big difference.
No, I don't think it does.
And some of the differences actually might work against it. Like, evidently, Them was supposed to be color.
It was,
But the ants, the way they were painted, it didn't look good.
They were almost kind of glittery.
Yeah, it evidently looked better in black and white.
Yeah, remember? Yeah, because we did a breakdown of that a while back, and I said, yeah, it was initially supposed to be in color.
Yeah, they were kind of pinkish red with fucking circles and stuff on them, and they didn't look that good.
Some stuff is just creepier in black and white, I kind of feel like. And this one, because of the Arctic setting, I don't think you need it to be, like, super colorful.
Mm-mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, the thing about this, like I said, it's based on it's a novella, right, by John W. Campbell.
Who Goes There, right?
Yeah, it's called Who Goes There, and that actually came out in 1938, which is crazy. I think it was first published in Astounding Science Fiction, like the magazine. I don't know if it was all published in one go or if it was kind of like in pieces.
What's up, Tammy?
Hey, Tammy. Yeah, hey, everybody. Hey, Hugo.
Yeah, everybody's there. Yeah.
Everybody's here. Mm-hmm. And that original story, which I read a very, very long time ago, but pretty much everything from the John Carpenter version was in the original story. In the original story, the alien did come there and could absorb, you know, the physical and mental attributes of everybody, like, that it took over. One thing that they didn't put in the movie, though, was I think in the story that the alien was telepathic also. which would have made him even more powerful. Yeah. But maybe, I don't know, maybe they thought, well, that's just going, like, one step too far, and it's getting a little New Agey or whatever, so they didn't, like, want to do that. I don't know. So,
in the Carpenter version?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well,
that's what I'm saying.
It would have been too unbeatable.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it would just be too powerful. You wouldn't be able to fight it, because it would know when you were what you were thinking about doing to it.
Chuckleheads like MacReady and his boy would have never been able to fucking beat the thing.
That's true.
MacReady wasn't a rocket scientist.
Right.
Okay. I went go back.
A rocket surgeon.
Yeah. go back and watch Carpenter's version. He's doing a lot of shit that you shouldn't have done. Like, he's blowing him up with dynamite.
Yeah.
Dumb.
He didn't know, you know what I mean? It's like they were just desperate. Everywhere. They were just desperate.
Yeah. He's spreading those little particles everywhere.
Yeah.
Doing that.
Ew, particles.
Yeah. Each one of them was alive.
Yeah.
The explosions don't kill things the way a lot of people think. It just moves them, you know. So you're making it worse.
Just moves it over there.
Yeah, just moves it. Yeah. Yeah, if you see a building blown up, it's because it moved.
Yeah.
You moved it. It broke into pieces. You know, it's pushing it. So, you know, pushing it fast.
Yeah.
And that's all you'd be doing with the thing. You're spreading it around if you're blowing it up with dynamite.
Yeah, I guess they didn't really know. So it's like they're kind of like blowing it up. I'm like, now you're just making a bunch of little bitty things.
You're spreading it,
that are going to like go all over the place. Right. It's like an infection. Yeah.
Fire was a lot better idea.
Yeah. Which they also use in the 1951 version. Yeah. But so this version, very famously directed by Christian Nyby, allegedly, even though most people, I don't even know if most people say it was actually directed by Howard Hawks, who was a lot more famous. He had a producer credit on it, but a lot of people said, oh, Christian Nyby, you know, this would have been his first directorial credit because he was an editor. And so Howard Hawks, like, let him have the directorial credit, even though Howard Hawks, as far as I know, like, kept almost all the director's fee, which was, like, $50,000. I think he only gave Christian Nyby, like, $5,000 or something like that, like, out of that. But there's kind of, like, the cast, like, the way they talk about it, some of them said, yeah, Howard Hawks was actually the director. Some of them said, no, Christian Nyby was the director, but he deferred to Howard Hawks because he worked with him all the time. Because, like I said, that was his editor. Howard Hawks... you know, if you don't know who that is, he's very, like, famous, you know, very golden age of Hollywood camera. This was the first science fiction film that he had ever done. He did a lot of stuff in other genres. He did a lot of noir. He did a lot of comedies, westerns, like he did Red River and stuff like that. And he has a very particular style, which was very unusual for the 50s. And you can see it a lot in this movie, too, with all the naturalistic, like, overlapping dialogue. It's almost like in modern era, it's more like a Robert Altman kind of movie where, you know, there'll be like several conversations going on at once. Everyone's talking over each other and interrupting each other. He's trying to get it to sound more like a naturalistic, you know, like naturalistic interactions. And like I said, you didn't really get that much in the 1950s, but this actually really does have that kind of Howard Hawks, you know, vibe to it where everyone's talking over each other. And that's, you know, the dialogue is like really witty and snappy and funny kind of, you know what I mean? So it has that kind of thing going on, which is why a lot of people thought that, you know, Howard Hawks had directed it. Now, as I said, the novella, I guess, that this was based on, did have the alien that absorbed people and, like, took them over and replicated them perfectly. So that was definitely, like, a thing that was in the original story. But obviously, this didn't have a huge, huge budget. So basically what they decided to do was take all the stuff about like the Arctic and like finding the spacecraft and everything, but the alien, they decided to make it more like, he's like a dude, but he's like plant-based.
Yeah.
He's like an impossible alien, like an impossible whopper, but a person.
Yeah.
He's kind of like a Frankenstein monster, to be honest. Like he kind of, because, well, and you know who that is? That's James Arness from Gunsmoke.
Okay.
It's actually, I think this was pre-Gunsmoke. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Like this was, I don't think this was his first film, but it was like among his first films. And they put so much like makeup and shit on him that it's like you could barely, because he was a big dude, you know what I mean? So they wanted somebody that was real big. And, the makeup didn't really look that great, like, in close-up, so they kind of, like, kept him in shadow most of the time or, like, you know, cut out some stuff that he was in.
Now, look, I got to say this. My dad told me the whole vegetable angle, because I remember him telling me about the original movie after I had seen the Carpenter's version when I was 13. He liked the vegetable angle back in the 50s. That was good enough back then.
Yeah.
It doesn't hold up, that the whole vegetable angle. It's not that creative, not by today's standards.
And it's very pseudoscience-y, like the way they explain it. They're like, oh, it's not that weird. There's plants on Earth that are sentient. I'm like, are there?
Really?
I never heard of that. I'm not a botanist or anything.
You've been talking to L. Ron Hubbard. Because he's trying to fucking give him fucking auditing and shit. Trying to audit the plants.
Right, trying to audit the tomatoes and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah. Fucking,
Do tomatoes scream when you pick them?
Yeah, he's full of shit. so, no, it doesn't... The plant angle does not hold up as being interesting. And it's kind of weird because the original novel, or the short story, has an interesting premise. It absorbs you.
Yeah.
And that's a lot better.
That's terrifying.
That's a lot better. So you could pull this story off in the pages of a novella, but they weren't ready to do it on screen yet. Although I think they could have done it. You could have done it with
editing.
That's
the thing. It's like, I'm not really sure if they just didn't do it because they thought that it would be easier to make it more like just a straight up like a Frankenstein type monster movie, or if they thought that it would be too scary. Like, I've heard both things. You know what I mean? Maybe it was like a little bit of column A, a little column B. Maybe they'd have thought that had been like way too terrifying, like something that
I think they should have gone for it, man.
But see, that's the thing. It's like, in a way, that might have been a lot easier because you didn't have to make it like a John Carpenter, like fucking, you know, special effects extravaganza.
No, just not show it.
You could just not show it because it doesn't have a form of its own. And then like, but you could ramp up the paranoia, like paranoia, like we don't know, like which,
you could
like
have
they
it,
did in the later one.
You could have it where a dude opens the door and there's something pushing on the door and tentacles and shit. And then he goes, it's in there. It's absorbing that man. You know what I mean? That's all you needed back then to go, what?
It's absorbing that man.
Yeah, and then you open it up and there's dudes in there and you know, and the place is torn up.
And but they're all like, they're what? We're, it's fine.
Yeah,
we're
but
not,
then you're
not
like, no,
aliens.
You were being absorbed, you know?
No,
yeah,
not,
it wasn't me.
No.
Yeah, so, you know.
I don't know what you're talking about.
They could have done it that way. I think it would have been a better
movie. It might have been cheaper, actually, because you wouldn't have had like all the makeup on the, now that you mention it.
Yeah, I think it would have been a better movie. But this is the route that they took. It's not a bad movie. It's just very 50s. And
it's very 50s.
It was good enough to do very well in the 50s.
This was massively influential.
Yeah.
And honestly, this came out the same year as... shit, I want to say, was it When Worlds Collide? Or there was like three real big, it was this one and then like two other ones that were like really big that came out that were really, really influential. And then that kind of like blew the doors off like after that. Because this was 51, this was early 50s.
Yeah.
So this was like really, really, really influential, like a very influential science fiction film. Like one of the first big ones that
came out.
Yeah,
my dad said it was like a blockbuster. Everybody loved it.
Yeah, it was, and like I said, that it really kind of like, it wasn't just this one, but there was a couple other ones that came out around the same time.
Yeah, and they all thought that
Day of the Earth Stood Still, that's right.
Yeah, that day, he loved Day of the Earth Stood Still also. And back in the 50s, like in my dad's time, these were like Aliens, Predator, fucking, you know, John Carpenter's The Thing. It's like all that shit, okay? It's on that level. You see it now. It's not as impressive as it was, but you got to watch the movie in the context of the time.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, think about how many years have gone by since then.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is you're always going to, like, be more scared or more affected by stuff that you saw when you were very young.
Yeah.
And it's going to seem, like, much scarier to you. Like, you know, if kids nowadays, like, see something from the 1950s, that's obviously not going to be scary to them. Because...
If you like Carpenter's version, you watch this movie, you see where a lot of Carpenter got his ideas from.
Yeah.
A lot of it.
Yeah, some of the scenes in here, like, they took it, like, he was homaging
scenes. There's a character in here named Mac.
Yeah. I think he's McPherson, actually,
yeah, they never
not
call
MacReady.
Him MacReady, they just call him Mac.
He's McPherson, that's his name. And I don't know if they ever call
and
him
he's kind of just a bit part. But and also just the interiors, the way things look, you can see where Carpenter got it, the interior of the camp. And he does not make certain mistakes that this movie makes. And I can tell that he sidestepped that shit on purpose. Like the whole close the door thing. It's obvious that that dude is not in a cold environment. That that house is not in a cold environment. They have to keep telling you it's cold to make you think it. But that house is like a mock-up of a house somewhere in Southern California in the 50s.
It is, yeah. It was on a soundstage. Yeah, although I will give the movie credit. a lot of the exteriors, like with the snow and everything like that, were shot.
Yeah, they look good
in Glacier National Park in Montana. Yeah.
And they look good.
Yeah.
So Carpenter learned from that.
He learned shoot what it in works. The real shit. Because
shooting real shit and don't shoot in fake shit. So I think Carpenter was like, I'm not going to make that mistake, and I'm going to do what they did there. So the movie is very instructive. Okay, I can see what Carpenter was doing when I watched this movie.
Yeah.
The interiors are great. The interior of the camp, that's straight out of John Carpenter's version.
Yeah, he made it look like pretty much like that.
Yeah, and it's realistic. It looks pretty realistic, even the 50s version.
Slasher Fred said, I noticed this as well. It said, I noticed in the 80s film, all the characters are male, and in the 50s film, there is a female character.
Because the 80s film was more realistic.
Yeah, I kind of feel like the 50s one, they just feel like, you know, and I really actually really like the female character in this. She's actually one of the best characters, and she actually wasn't, this was kind of her only major acting role. She was more like a model, and I think she was, like, great in this. She's, like, really funny and, like, really, you know, she's very personable. I think that she's in there, she's, like, a secretary to the doctor, right? Yeah. Isn't she the doctor's secretary? So that's why she's there.
They have to have a woman in a 50s movie.
Well, they have to put her in there because there's always, like, a romance subplot had to be, like, shoehorned in there. Because, like, the main dude, you know, was like... Now, that I will say, though, that does lead to, like, some funny scenes. The one scene where... Because I guess her and that one dude, they had, like, a prior fling or whatever. And so he's trying to, like, rekindle that flame, right? And she's, like, just teasing him about, like, how handsy he was, like he was an octopus or whatever. And then, like, later on, she actually, like, ties him to a chair. And she's, like putting, like, liquor in his mouth. And I was like, oh, okay, this is pretty dirty for, like, 1951. Yeah. I was like, got some BDSM action going on there. Yeah. It wasn't that, but it's like, that's what I thought of.
Now, when I talk about the realism, I know, because I was stationed at a place called OP-311, which is a desert island right outside the Gulf of Aqaba, outside on the coast of Egypt, or Sinai Peninsula. And it's the desert version of fucking this Antarctic or North Polar camp. Our camp was about one-third that size, but all the same stuff. You got generator men and shit burners and cooks and medics and in a situation like that, it's a military/government backed situation, especially in this era, there wouldn't be a woman for 100 miles. It's just military guys and government contractors. And in Carpenter's version, those are government contractors, ex-military government contractors in that weather station. And a lot, you know, MacReady being a Vietnam veteran helicopter pilot, and the other guys, you know, they're merchant marines and ex-naval guys. You know, because like that one dude's got a damn earring. One of the medics guys, he's got an earring. That was merchant marines back in those days. So naval guys manned those kind of posts. No woman would ever want to be down there, man. There's nothing to do. Nothing. It's
hardship. Most of the guys didn't even want to be
there. The guys didn't. those are desperate men that have no incomes, and they have a fucking... their worksheet fucking allows it. These are the same guys that work on damn offshore oil rigs. It's that same kind of guy. And which is... Those are tough motherfuckers, you know what I mean? But... That's not select stuff, you know what I mean? You make a lot of money, but there are no social life at all. Brutal. It's like being a long-haul trucker. Worse than that. So that's a great setting for a story like this. Great setting, because crazy shit would happen in a place like that. It wouldn't happen at your local drugstore or grocery store. It would be in some weird place where there aren't normal people. It's on the edge of civilization. So that's why this movie's cool.
Yeah,
they're up on the North Pole in this version, not the Antarctic, but the North Pole.
Yeah, this is Arctic. They start out in Alaska, and then they go up to, like, the Arctic Circle because they're investigating what they think is a plane crash. Now, that's another thing.
Yeah, I think this is kind of odd, isn't it?
In this version, aren't they implying that the spacecraft crashed not too long ago?
Yeah, and then in the same story, they say it's millions of years old.
That's what I mean. Like, did I miss something?
Wait a minute, hold on.
I thought I missed something. Yeah. Well, because the thing about it is that the John Carpenter version, you're led to believe, like, the spacecraft didn't just crash. It's been there.
No, a long time ago, yeah.
For, like, a really long time.
Well, the
but
one
in
guy
this
says,
one, they that's how they knew to go out there and, like, look for it, because it's like, oh, we saw some weird shit. They thought it was, like, a weird plane that had crashed, so they went up there to, like, investigate.
In the Carpenter version, the geologist or the iceologist, I don't know what it was, he goes, this ice here, man, has been this is at least 100,000 years old, you know. So that craft had been there for at least 100,000 years, which that's plausible.
Right. See, that to me, that that's like, I know that's plausible. Weird, but it kind of makes it like a little bit more believable.
Because not only with this thing, when you're dealing with fucking alien spacecraft and shit like that, probability has a lot to do with time and space. Chances are this is something that happened a long time ago. A long time ago, something crashed here, and it's still alive. That's far more likely than you're just walking around and, hey, look, we saw something crash. That's extremely unlikely when you're dealing with so much space and time in the universe.
That's what I'm saying. I think that's what made, like, the Carpenter version, like, more believable in that sense.
Yeah, Carpenter's pulling you in, and you're like, this is a documentary.
Because that's been there for, like,
this
a really long
documentary.
Time.
Documentary, yeah, and they blew it up. And they blew, and they got the whole, blew it up in this. And you realize how dumb it is to blow
this,
it up.
I mean,
they blew it up.
It was kind of like hilarious. This was kind of hilarious because it's like they find out where the shit is. Like you can see it from the top. There's like an ice and it's kind of like round and stuff. And they're like, okay, well that's where it was. So they go get in their helicopter or whatever, and they go out there and get it. And then they couldn't afford to show it, I guess, like the spacecraft. So they just had the scientists in actually like a really cool, like iconic scene. It was very stylized and I liked the way they did it. But they had all the scientists or all the guys like standing around in a circle, like stand on the edge where you see like through the ice. And so it's like this big circle. They're like, oh my God, it's a flying saucer. That's awesome. And then that one guy that's like the reporter who keeps saying, holy cats all the time. Like he says that all the time. So they're standing there like that. And they're like, well, we have to get it out of the ice. So let's put some like thermite bombs.
Yeah, we're going to blow it up.
And they didn't mean to blow it up, but I'm like, well, obviously. And then they're like, oh shit, we blew it up.
Right.
I'm like, what did you think
was
going to happen?
And destroy the ship.
What did you think
and then
was
they got
happen?
Let off the hook. Hey, if the ship gets destroyed from the thermite, don't worry. Oh, we're off the hook. And then Carpenter's version, fucking, you got MacReady going, and the dumb motherfuckers blew it up.
Referring to this, probably.
Yeah, you're referring to this movie. Dumb motherfuckers, they blew it up. And then Carpenter's blaming it on the Norwegians. Americans aren't so dumb that they blow it up. The Norwegians did that shit. It's a great. It's like Carpenter working his magic.
I know. It's like funny. That was like so funny to me because I'm like in this movie. I'm like I said, I know that they were doing a workaround because it's like, well, we can't afford to build like a big life size alien spacecraft.
Yeah.
So let's just say like, oh, they can kind of see it through the ice, and they're like, oh, we're gonna try and get it out of the ice with thermite bombs. Oh shit, we blew it up. Yeah. And I was just like, really? Okay.
Carpenter solved the issue with a matte painting, an excellent matte shot.
Right.
Of the craft. Now here's another problem with this narrative. You're having military, extensive infantry military experience, thermite does not explode; it just burns.
Yeah.
Okay, so it wouldn't blow it up.
But most people wouldn't have known that.
Yeah, it doesn't
back
explode.
Then,
it just
so
sits there and
just
burns like a welding arc. We use it to demolish captured equipment. If you capture a vehicle and you can't take
I think
you just put that on the engine and fucking burns through.
They explained in the movie, if I'm not mistaken, that's what they expected it to do.
To burn it, melt it out of the ice.
To melt it out of the ice, but then it reacted with some weird metal that
made it blow up.
So I think they did actually explain that.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah, thermite does not explode.
Right.
It's
That's why they didn't mean to blow it up.
If I remember correctly, it's about a 50-50 mixture of powdered aluminum and powdered magnesium. I think that's basically thermite. It just goes off like, you know the sparklers? That on steroids.
Danny Rowling said, does the monster in this film talk? No.
No.
Thankfully.
No. And he doesn't listen for very long either.
He's like, I don't want to listen to your bullshit.
He knocks his ass away,
Yeah, I mean, basically, like I said, he looks like a dude. Obviously, it's James Arness in a big, like a jumpsuit, but with some weird shit on his head. And he has like, it's just like spikes, like on his
hands,
like a thorny hand. Because he's supposed to be like a plant guy, which, like I said, I guess in the 50s, they could have made him look like, you know, Swamp Thing or something like that. That'd have been neat. But they didn't. It's basically just like a guy with some weird shit on his head. But they don't show him all that much. I think you get like 40, 50 minutes into the movie before they even show him. Like, it's mostly kind of like people talking about, because like I said, it was pretty low budget, so it's like, it's usually people coming in and being like, oh my god, it's like some fucked up shit was like happening in the other room, you know what I mean, but they don't like show it ever.
He's just in a flight suit
pretty much. Yeah,
and he does the kind of things that Frankenstein would do. He's a little more athletic, but not much. Just a threatening big motherfucker with horny hands. You know, the dude's got horny hands. And
everybody's got a horny hand.
Yeah, right.
I don't know why I thought of that.
A weird Frankenstein kind of head on the top of him.
Yeah, he's got like Frankenhead.
And he's an alien, and he's here to whip your ass. He's not here to fucking talk.
He's here to drink blood, chew gum, and kick ass.
Yeah, I mean, just like MacReady, just like MacReady from the Carpenter version. I don't know. Maybe he's just been frozen in the ice. He's pissed off. I don't know why.
I'd be pissed off too if I was frozen in ice.
It's kind of like Krussel and fucking MacReady into the second one. It's just explaining what happened in the first one. I don't know. He's just pissed off.
Yeah.
Because that's really the
essentially
that's what happened in this movie. Doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. Well, why the alien he's trying to propagate himself. Yeah. He's been frozen in the ice.
He drinks blood.
Yeah.
And then, well, because look, like the scientist, who is kind of the antagonist, or at least like the secondary antagonist in this, like the alien is the bad guy, obviously. But the scientist who wants to keep him alive, who doesn't want to destroy him, who wants to study him, is also kind of a bad guy. So this is like kind of like a little bit, I don't know if I'd go so far as to say it's like an anti-science movie, but the scientist in this is like essentially like the secondary bad guy.
Yeah.
Because what he wants to do is he is taking, because what happens is like the alien, he goes out and like he fights with the sled dogs and he kills one of the sled dogs and like drinks all the blood. But during the fight, like he gets his arm ripped off.
Yeah.
And then the
He grows back though.
Well, yeah, that's one thing is like he's kind of like a plant person. So like his shit grows back, like if it comes off. But also like the scientist takes the severed arm and then he starts taking like blood from their blood supply, like that they're supposed to be saving in case anybody gets hurt, like up there on the thing. But you know, and starts feeding it to the seeds, I guess, like kind of seeds that he found in the arm. And so he's growing like these little plants. So he's like cultivating like little alien baby plants, just to see what will happen, because you know he's a scientist. He's like, we have to know, we can't destroy it. Whereas everybody else like are all like the military guys and everything. It's like, we have to fucking destroy it. It's gonna take over the fucking world. And you know what I mean. And then the scientist is like, no, you can't.
Nick seen the remake, the Carpenter remake, but not this one. No, you should see this one.
I mean, it's interesting to see.
You can see where Carpenter got a lot of his ideas. And how Carpenter addresses this movie in The Thing. He kind of like I don't know, he's just pissed off. You know, when you know Carpenter's remake well, you can see that he really studied this movie.
Yeah. Okay. Well, he loved this movie.
And though somebody mentioned the 2011 is a prequel of what happened at the Norwegian
camp. Norwegians, yeah.
And I like that movie.
I did as well. I know.
On Blu-ray.
It's kind of like half people like it, half people not
so
much. I liked it too.
I like it. It was going to be an homage to Carpenter's and have all practical effects. And they did, evidently, really good practical effects for it. But then the studio that did that decided in their wisdom, they're like, well, we want this to look more like a new movie. We're going to cover those practical effects with CG. Which evidently pissed a lot of people off, that the practical effects underneath that CG was super good.
Well, most people that are into horror movies like that, it's like, yeah, let us see the practical effects. Right. I would rather see slightly substandard practical effects than okay-looking CGI. Yeah.
Now, in that movie's defense, you're going to call it a CG movie now, or like a CGI, but it's some of the best CGI because the actors are reacting to something that's really there.
Yeah, because when they shot it, it was there. Because
when they shot it, it was there.
Right.
They were reacting to a practical effect, and that they CG'd over it. Which I'm gonna say that they canceled each other out. I'm gonna say it's a good movie. I liked it, and it was in the spirit of Carpenter's, very much so. It's hard to top an original. Okay, it just is. Does it top the original? In some ways, it shows you more. It even shows you inside the alien spacecraft. And I thought it was a very realistic depiction because you don't recognize anything in there. I mean, there's one time where they go to this central room and there's just all these little cubes appearing and disappearing and making this weird pattern.
Everybody's like, and you're the like fuck what is the that? Fuck is that?
Who are you to ask what that is? We don't know what
they
the
know
fuck.
What that is.
They know what that is. You're used to screens and flat screens and tablets and whatever this thing is, that's their readout. That's their display. It makes sense to the fucking thing. Okay? Which I thought that was a fucking great touch. It was a truly alien in there. You know. Wasn't your opinion of what an alien craft would be like. You would go in there and you just don't understand it. I love that kind of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but no. See 2011 thing also. Good. We saw it in the theater when it came out.
We did, yeah.
I liked it.
I did as well. I wasn't expecting to, but it's like, yeah, I really did good. Like it.
Yeah.
But the thing about it, okay, so can we talk too about the 1951 one?
Okay.
The thing, how the thing gets thawed out.
Yeah.
Can we talk about this for a second?
Yeah, we can talk about it.
Because it's like them blowing up the spacecraft. I'll give them that. Like, that was an accident, okay? Like I said, they had the thermite. It's like they were kind of like, they didn't think it was going to blow up, but it reacted with the metal. Okay, fine. But then they're like, okay, well, we can salvage this one, the pilot, you know, the alien, in this big block of ice, and we're going to put it in, you know, the outpost or whatever. And it's like, we're just going to leave it right here. We're going to study it. Like, the higher-ups want to see it or whatever. So they're just going to leave it in there. So then they have somebody, like, keeping a guard over it. One of the guys that's keeping a guard over it gets creeped out by the sight of the presumably dead alien, like, in the block of ice. So he's like, I'm just going to throw this blanket over this ice block. But wah-wah... Like, the blanket is an electric blanket, and somebody that was in there previously had left it plugged in, and so it starts melting the ice, and he's just, like, sitting there literally 2 feet away and does not notice until it thaws out enough for the thing to get up, and then he turns around, and he's like, what? And I was like, I feel like there's other ways that that could have been done. I was watching something earlier, maybe it was Dr. Wolfila. But he actually pointed out that he's like, it probably would have been better if the scientist, who was already like the secondary bad guy, had like thawed the thing out. You know what I mean? Like, he had sabotaged the shit. Somebody's like, well, I don't know how it happened. You know what I mean? Because he wanted to study it. That would have made more sense than just like some idiot throwing an electric blanket and not noticing that it was plugged in and also not noticing that this huge ice block was melting. Like, right, like literally a couple feet away from him.
Yeah, it's just it's the 50s,
right?
And
like we just need this to thaw out so it can rampage.
Yeah, that didn't fly. That did not. That didn't fly. Fucking in the new ones at all either. Remember, fucking in the 2011 one, it showed the block.
Yeah,
you know, how it originally got out, and it didn't. There was no thawing involved. It's because they drilled a hole in it. And it fucking woke up.
He's like, ow, who's drilling
me? Yeah. It drilled a hole right through it and got a sample. And it busted out later on. Yeah. So see the 2011 prequel. It's good.
Yeah, Danny Rowling said, I didn't watch the 2011 version for the longest time because I thought it was a remake.
No.
Until one day someone said it's a prequel. Then I watched it and was blown away and bought it on DVD.
Yeah
it's about the Norwegian team that they referred to in the first one.
Yeah.
That's what it's about.
And in the theater, when how they found the saucer blew me away. They were just in that damn snowcat, this crawler. And it went down a crack.
Oh, my God. That freaked me out so bad.
Yes, the headlights were shining on it.
Yeah,
I was like, "Oh man, that's falling
down
awesome.
Like the crevasse or whatever." Holy shit, that was a harrowing scene, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I remember that. That's one of the scenes that I remember the most from that movie because it like fucking scared me.
And it explained how that dude was frozen and cut his fucking throat and his fucking hands and froze himself and everything that happened. And in the Norwegian team, there was a female. I think there was one.
Yeah,
it was just one, and they brought her on, but she hadn't been there long. They brought her there. She was a biologist. If I remember correctly. And they knew that they had found that creature and they needed her. So it was good 2011.
Actually, the 2011 one, I think there were two women. Well, because they brought the biologist, and I think there was another woman there who was a Norwegian woman.
She was already there.
Because the biologist was American, but I think they also had a Norwegian woman, but I can't remember what her job was.
Yeah.
But the thing about it was, like, even in the John Carpenter version, I'm not super clear on what all those dudes' jobs are. Like, I know, like, what, like, Windows, he was the communications guy,
right, yeah.
The guy on the roller skates was the cook.
He was the cook, yeah.
Right?
That was Childs.
Right. No, that wasn't Childs.
It was Childs was Keith David.
Yeah.
I forgot what the other guy, the other ones were Generator, you had the dog guy.
And then Wilford Brimley was scientist. The doctor. He's a medical, medical pathologist. Medical.
And then there was weather scientists.
Yeah, there you go.
MacReady was the pilot. You had a head of security, the guy that had who was Ram from fucking what you call it.
That's right.
He was head of security, so he was
from Logan's Run TV
from
show.
Logan's Run.
I got a comment on that the other day because remember we did that Logan's Run TV like a long time ago.
Yeah.
I just got a comment on there yesterday that said thank you so much for not like tearing this one a new asshole like most people do. Because I guess a lot of people like negatively review it, and somebody came on, and they were happy that we hadn't done that. I'm like, I liked that series actually. I didn't think it was bad.
Well, it had problems. The aliens,
well, sure, but you know,
it was of its time.
Yeah,
of its time.
I'm willing to like watch things in the context of their time, and I'm willing to give a lot of shit a break. Like if I know that it didn't have a lot of like a high budget, or and I can tell what they were trying to do. Like I'll give it a lot of leeway. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nick says, I saw an old movie the other night that blew me away, The Night of the Demon from 1957. I've been wanting to, like, review that for, like, a really long time because I really like that movie. I highly recommend it if you haven't seen it. Really creepy. Yeah, that's a really, really great fucking 50s movie. We should probably review that one of these days. I've been wanting to do it for ages. I haven't seen it since for a really long time. Yeah, it's a fucking classic. It's really, really good. Yeah, so I do kind of feel like if you like the John Carpenter one, then it's really interesting to watch this. That's why we wanted to watch this one. I saw this movie when I was a kid, but I didn't really remember that much about it other than, oh, I forgot to mention too, I think the best scene in this, honestly, is when the thing, like the alien, like busts into the room and then they throw kerosene on it and set it on fire, like set him on fire with the flare gun or whatever.
Good stunt.
That, I think, was either the first or one of the very first like full body burn stunts ever, and it looks really good. I mean, I was watching it, I was like, wow, that could have gone horribly
very
wrong.
Very dangerous. They were throwing flammable fucking fluid everywhere
because he was already on fire, and they kept throwing kerosene on him, and I'm like, holy crap, that poor fucking stunt man. That could have gone like really, really wrong. It looks fantastic though, like even today.
The Thing from Another World was a great movie in its day. It's not a bad film of today, but one of the things that it does, it's not a bad film by today's standards, but what it's best suited for really is a supplementary kind of, it supplements John Carpenter's The Thing. It shows you what it was he was trying to fix. Okay.
Yeah, that's maybe a good way of putting it.
Carpenter's version was closer to the short story.
It was, yeah.
So he was restoring it. It's not a remake. It's
more another
like,
adaptation.
Yeah, it's more kind of like a repair. It's like, yeah, that thing, the old thing was good, but it's so different from the book. Let's fix it. That's what he's doing. And he took all the strong points from this movie and included it in his, got rid of all the weak stuff, and then restored the story, even though he told it his own way. There's a lot of stuff that didn't, from the book, I think the names of the characters are all different. The morality tales aren't there. There was a bunch of morality tales in the first one. I think about greed, corporate greed, and it's been a long time. I read an animated version of who goes there. And it's a lot different than The Thing, but it's the same general concept.
It's the same general story, though.
Yeah, dude's being absorbed by an alien creature,
and they don't know who's who anymore.
And they don't know
because
who's
like
who.
People
can't trust anybody,
right? Which, like I said, I kind of feel like the Howard Hawks 1951 version, it kind of doesn't have that paranoia aspect. It has a little bit of that, I guess. But it doesn't have it to the same extent that the John Carpenter one was did, and like that also the original story had, because it's like you don't know, like, if you know, suddenly your best friend or your spouse or whatever, it's like they could be an alien now and they've been absorbed and you don't know because they look and act completely the same.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's way, way scarier than just like a lumbering monster that you can like throw fire at, you know, and that they electrocute at the end.
Carpenter's version becomes basically fucking Kurt Russell and Keith David, all right, trying to figure out who's the thing, all right? And it's just a fucking classic. And they're using
God,
the blood
test. God,
what a
great fucking ending.
Yeah.
That is a great fucking ending. It's both, one of the best endings
they
in
both live, and I both think they're not the thing. I think they're not the thing. But they both die. Okay.
I mean, one or the other could be the thing. Neither one could be the thing. They could both be the thing.
You see, the thing is, though, is they show Keith David, and he turns his fucking head, and he's got an earring in. And when you got an earring in, you're not the thing.
Yeah, they've established that because he can't. It can't replicate like can't an organic material.
Right. He got it. So it,
like fillings and stuff.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You can't. You kind of spoiled the 2011 version because there's other ways to figure out.
Right.
Who's the thing? Okay. And they were using another way. Okay. In 2011, they hadn't thought of the blood test. Didn't have time. And it's things like, do you have earrings? That kind of shit. And there's other ways.
Yeah, because that comes up too.
Yeah.
Because that comes up too.
So I really recommend the 2011 prequel. I can go back to it anytime. I enjoy it every time I watch it. So it stands up.
It really does.
It stands up.
Like I said, you're never going to top the John Carpenter one. I mean, to be honest, that's
it's a great
one
homage,
of the best
though.
Horror movies of all time.
Yeah.
Honestly, that it's...
For even the weaknesses it has, it's still good because...
It's in my top five. Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's number one, sometimes it's number two. Depending on what mood I'm in that day, but it's like it's definitely in my top five always. I mean, that film, I never get tired of it.
And poor Carpenter, I think what happened to his version of the thing, it's got its ass kicked at the box office and critically. It got terrible reviews,
which is like, I think the main criticism of the time was just like, oh, it was just
too
like
gross.
This big. Yeah, it was just like this big, gruesome.
Fucking stupid.
Like it was over the top and stuff like that. I'm like, well.
Yeah. And E.T. kicked its ass at the box office.
E.T. kicked everybody's ass and at the box office. I think my parents even took me to see E.T. when it came out.
And the thing was fucking one of the best movies ever fucking made.
I mean, it's easily one of the best movies ever.
And I think what happened to that movie, I think that kind of fucking crushed Carpenter. Because he never really was quite the same. I mean, he did come out with some good movies after that.
Yeah.
Because other people recognized, I think important people realized, like, no, that was a fucking badass flick.
Right.
Because he kept getting work, and he kept making bigger and bigger budget movies. Had E.T. not come out that year, and had people not been not so prejudiced against horror movies, The Thing was the best movie that year, easily.
Blade Runner came out the same day as The Thing. Do you know
that? Oh, man, I didn't realize
Isn't
that
crazy?
Oh, that's another
I didn't realize
movie.
That either. That was another weird factoid that I came movie. That I came across today while I was going down that rabbit
that
hole.
That movie got fucking raped. That movie got raped too, though.
It did, though,
It failed.
That was another one that didn't get appreciated until much later. Like, sometimes that happens. And it's like, I can understand how fucking... that would just like bum you out because it's like you spent like so much blood and sweat and tears. This is my best movie, and it's like I love, and it's like it's a labor of love, and then you release it and you think it's the best thing ever,
and
then
and
everybody's
shit
like,
on it.
Man, or like everybody just like poops on it, and I'm just like, man, that's really got to fucking disillusion you. Yeah. I get it.
It's not just us and our generation. I've seen reactions to Carpenter's The Thing with young people who have never seen it before, and it blows them away. They were like, that's the best movie I've ever seen. Okay.
Yeah, I definitely don't think it's a thing where it's like, oh, well, you have to go back to 1982 and you have to like give it, because sometimes like there's two kinds of movies. There's a movie that you can watch anytime and it's just timeless. Like it doesn't really matter. Like even if it has like some little dated things, because obviously it's going to, it doesn't matter because it's just like so fucking awesome that anybody from any generation can watch it and just like enjoy it. And then there's like the kind of movies that are good, but you have to kind of cast yourself back into that. Into the mindset of when it was made.
Yeah.
And to enjoy it. The Thing is one of those first kind of movies where it's like, you don't even have to, I don't know. Like, it's hard for me to say because, you know, it came out when I was 10 years old, but it's kind of like, I don't think it's dated at all. Really. It doesn't seem dated to me. In most ways.
Well, it's practical effects, so...
That's what I mean. That's why I'm saying that you should always kind of go with practical effects when you can, because it doesn't date. If you do CGI, as many filmmakers in the 90s and 2000s found out to their chagrin, you know, 10, 20, 30 years later, that is going to look like absolute ass.
Yeah, now there was a video game for The Thing.
Yeah, somebody mentioned that up thread, I think.
Yeah, well, they mentioned it. Okay, yeah, and I had it. I had it on a laptop for a while, but I got Xbox One now, and I don't think it's available for Xbox One anymore. They need to re-release that and remaster it, because I remember fucking liking it on PC. It was real good. It had a bunch of elements where you're talking to people, you don't know if they're the thing or not, and then you have people joining your party, and they have, like, fear levels, so how scared they are, and whether or not they trust you.
Right.
It's pretty cool. It's kind of like a shooter survival game. Pretty neat. And then the thing does bust out, and fucking little pieces of it fucking run around everywhere, and you got different weapons,
big dog,
and you're trying
head,
to fight this
human
thing.
Head, tentacles,
it needs to be,
arms, legs.
It probably doesn't look good by today's standards, but if they need to re-release that game, that'd be fun.
Yeah, that would be fun.
But I don't think they have it for Xbox One anymore.
Nick says, Palmer has the best line. You gotta be fucking kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that.
They're dropping
so,
out of the sky.
I love
like
that so much
gods,
because
man.
It's like, that's exactly how you would react if you saw, like, a severed head come to life and have spider legs and just, like, crawling across. I mean, you just wouldn't be able to believe it.
Yeah.
So it's like, that was, like, fucking perfect. It was, like, a perfect fucking reaction. Nick also says, I was the only kid that hated E.T. at the time. I loved The Thing.
Yeah, I didn't really like E.T. either.
I was 10 when I saw it, so I was kind of like, oh, this is nice, but it's just kind of like, when I saw it again later, I was like, eh.
Yeah, I was like 13, I was like, man, that's kid shit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
I was into The Thing, and fucking Blade Runner. And then around this time, also fucking Flash Gordon, the movie. I fucking love Flash Gordon. Might have been a year after that, I'm not sure. But it kind of all kind of blurs in together now, you know.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago.
Richard Brown said, have you seen The Void? Yes, I've seen that a couple of times, and it's awesome. It's great. Very Lovecraftian. Slasher Fred said, Keith David later appeared in They Live. Yep, that's right. We reviewed They Live, like, a long time ago.
Got it on Blu-ray. Great movie. One of the greatest fight scenes of all times between fucking Keith David and Roddy Piper.
Just trying to, over trying to get him to put the sunglasses on so he could see the aliens.
He could see the aliens.
They're just like beating each other up for like, how long is it? Like 6 minutes? It might be longer than that,
It's long. It was on purpose.
Yeah. And it's just like the longer it goes on, the funnier it is.
Yeah.
I don't know why that's so fucking funny to me, but it's like, I get it.
Keith gets him on and goes, oh, I see it now.
All that time, god damn it, it took all that time just to get it to put the fucking glasses on. That's like fucking hilarious.
So is that it?
I think so. Like, I was trying to think if there was anything else that I wanted to say. So I mean, if you like 50s sci-fi, you know, if you like Day the Earth Stood Still, if you like that kind of stuff, then you, I mean, The Thing from Another World, you kind of have to see it because it's one of the kind of foundational science fiction movies, right? It's one of the earliest ones, and it's one of the most influential ones. Now that we've seen, like, the John Carpenter version, which is kind of, like, the definitive version of this story, you know, you can see where a lot of the flaws are. But, I mean, there is still a lot to enjoy in there. But you can tell that it's very 50s, it's very low budget. I still had a good time watching it, but, I mean... You know, the John Carpenter one for me is like that all day.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, from my point of view, the purpose of this movie is to learn. You watch this movie to see what Carpenter did and what he changed and where he got good things and how he avoided some of the mistakes that this movie made. It's enjoyable from the point of view if you're going to, you know, if you want like a 50s monster movie, yeah, it'll give you that. The Carpenter's version is much better.
Yeah,
this is a good supplement to that,
though. I'm gonna agree with that. But yeah, it's a really interesting thing to like as two adaptations of the same story. You know, one of them done with more modern techniques and like with more money, and the 50s one. But like I said, you can see why the 50s one was so influential.
Yeah,
and It's interesting, too, because I kind of feel like in the early 50s, because like I said, this was 51, and in the early 50s, you still kind of had a couple different threads of sci-fi. Like I said, this one was very, almost like anti-science, you know what I mean? Because, like, the scientist was the bad guy, and it's, like, the fact that he wanted to keep the alien alive, like, so he could study it, whereas, like, the rest of them were like, fuck that, we just want to, like, kill it. So, you know, it kind of leaned very hard into that.
Well, that's the same as Aliens, though.
Right, well, because I kind of feel like, too, but then you had, like, some other ones, like, some other sci-fi movies of the period that kind of had more, like, friendly aliens or aliens that came there, to give us some technology, and then we, like, fucked up and, like, shot them or whatever. So there's kind of, like, two threads going on there. So I think it's kind of interesting in that regard. And I thought it was interesting, too, just because of, like, Howard Hawks's, sort of fingerprints on it with his very classic, everyone talking over each other, his very, like, his super snappy dialogue, everyone kind of making these little witty asides and, like, witty remarks and stuff like that. Like, I did like that. So the 50s one is much, I don't want to say it's, like, funny. It's not a comedy, but there is a lot more funny shit in it. Whereas in the 80s one, some of the humor, there's some dry humor in the 80s one, but it's not funny. Like, you know what I mean? Like, once they figure out what's going on, it's, like, really, really fucked up and not funny at all. And the 80s one is much, much scarier. And it goes back to the original story of, you know, being absorbed in, like, something taking over your form and, like, looking and sounding exactly like you, which to me is a lot scarier, like I said, than just, like, a dude in a flight suit, like, with a Frankenhead kind of stumbling around. And like I said, they do kind of, like, electrocute him at the end, and somebody said, turn him into a dwarf. Yeah, they actually did have a little person actor playing him on
shrunk
the
Shrunk his
thing
ass down.
To shrunk him down, which I didn't even notice. Like, when we were watching it, I thought that he was just, because it's kind of dark, like, when they do it, and it's like, you know, they're electrocuting him on this. What is that? They build, like, a little...
It's just a wooden walkway.
Like a wooden walkway with, like, some...
It didn't have floors. They were on the ice.
Right, that's right.
So they had wooden walkways.
So it's like, so they electrocute him. They get him to walk into this one place after the scientist comes up and goes, you're an alien, and, like, we could communicate and blah, blah, blah. And then the alien's like, fuck that shit, and, like, smacks the dude. And they're like, okay, well, electrocute his ass. They electrocute him. And I didn't even notice because it was so dark. I thought that James Arness was just, like, going down on his knees or something like that, like, going, I'm melting or whatever. But apparently there was, like, actually a little person actor that they had, so they turned him into a dwarf. And then, like, he got fucking killed. Richard Brown said, who wins in a fist fight, Keith David or David Keith?
I don't know who David Keith is.
I don't know. Wait. Yeah, who is that? I know that name, but it's, like,
Keith David had long arms. He'd have reach on you.
All right. So are we ready to, like, wrap it up? Yeah. I guess we've been going for, like, an hour, and I'm, like, pretty hungry.
Okay.
All right. So we'll be back tomorrow evening. Tomorrow evening is the main show. Tom's very excited because, speaking of aliens, we're doing a UFO show. We haven't done, like, a UFO sighting show in a really long time.
Yeah, and I got some exclusive content for this.
So I was glad that this won in the Patreon poll, finally.
Yeah, it's about Louis Zamora.
Lonnie Zamora.
Lonnie Zamora and his fucking case. Well, guess what? When I was in Korea, Lonnie Zamora's son was my squad leader, Sergeant Zamora. Yeah,
so he knows all kind of, like, inside info.
Yeah, I remember... what fucking Sergeant Zamora said about this case. It's not, and I've never heard it reproduced anywhere else. I can give you the insight.
I mean, I found some good rundowns. I want to get a good, because this was a UFO sighting that also happened in New Mexico, but it's much, much less famous than the Roswell one. Yeah. Although it's still pretty famous, like, in UFO circles. It happened in 1964, right? 1964. And so we're going to, like, talk about that. I first heard about it on Unsolved Mysteries. But, you know, we'll see. Like I said, I kind of want to get... I found a good write-up in, like, a UFO magazine, and then I also found a good write-up, like, in a skeptical magazine, too. So we can kind of, like, come at it from both angles, which I think will be fun. But, So that'll be the show tomorrow night, so hopefully you guys can join us. And I guess have a good rest of your evening, and we'll see you guys again tomorrow for the main show. Good night.